Welcome to First Things First. My name is Jenna Wolf. His name is Chris Carter. He's in the Hall of Fame. That is Nick Wright. He will be in the Hall of Fame one day. We'll figure out why later.
Oh, I'm in the Hall. Maybe not the Pro Football Hall, but there's, yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it.
Breaking news.
You didn't know?
No, give us a hall. Give us a hall you're in.
WAER at Syracuse University?
Yeah.
Pending induction. I'm assuming I'm going to be first ballot once I'm eligible. That's what I'm assuming. This all got thrown off because Jenna didn't say Hall of Famer Chris Carter.
No,
Chris Carter's in the Hall of Fame, and now we're here.
You are in the Hall. We will be one day.
Jenna.
Lena, what's happening?
We're all good?
Can we start over?
Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Oh, that is very sweet. Thank you for your little social studies love notes. You will never believe what Jared Goff had to say about Patrick Mahomes. The king returns to Cleveland, but we got to start this three-hour show in Dallas, where the Cowboys are setting the table for a Thanksgiving feast. Their guests, Washington. All right, let's go over some of the things Dallas is thankful for this holiday season. Back-to-back road wins, Ezekiel Elliott, a pretty good defense, and a 5-5 record in a very shaky division. In fact, they can pull even with Washington for the NFC East lead with a win tomorrow. Here's Dak Prescott on the pivotal division matchup.
Our backs are against the wall. Regardless, we're not worried about what we've done up to this point. It's about just moving forward, and I think that's allowed us to get on this two-game winning streak and get the record back to 500. Is because we know our backs are against the walls. Every game matters. Every game is a must-win. Nothing changes this week.
All right, CC. It's hard to believe we're saying this because we had this team all but dead a couple weeks ago. But are the Dallas Cowboys the team to beat in the NFC East?
Well, if you look at the circumstances that the Giants, Washington, world champion Philadelphia, if you look at every one of their individual situations, you've been like, I would much rather have Dallas. They're a lot healthier. How they match up with the other teams, they match up better. And typically you'd be like, I'm going to take the best quarterback. Now, Carson Wentz is the best quarterback. That wouldn't be a debate. That wouldn't be a long conversation. But the rest of the football team, you can see that Dallas and their ability to be able to run the ball and dominate. And it's very important in November, how healthy are you? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can only play, you can say next guy up, but you know every time you go, the talent level, every time that next guy go up, the talent level goes down. And there's reason why that player was not playing.
Sure.
And they have limitations, and typically they get exploited. I just believe that Dallas and their front seven, that being offensively and defensively, based on Washington and what they faced in the last couple weeks as far as wholesale injuries across that offensive line, like, I believe that matchup is just in their quarterback. So I just don't believe they'll be able to overcome that. Dallas has the situation that I believe that as the season goes on, they are going to get better, and the other teams, definitely, we haven't seen that.
Right now, the team that's playing the second-best football in the NFC East is the New York Giants. The Giants, they've won a couple games lately. They are coming off arguably the best game of the year. Like, Giants playing the second-best football. Dallas is playing the best. For Washington, it's been an injury issue. We talked about how the injuries might have ruined them, and that was before they lost their starting quarterback to a traumatic lower leg injury. I will warn the Cowboys of this. Once upon a time, 4 years ago on national television, Colt McCoy beat you. Colt McCoy beat you in a year that you were actually pretty good. And Colt McCoy, since that season, hasn't started a game in this league. That was in 2014. And so,
mentioned that because Colt McCoy will be starting for Washington in place of Alex Smith.
Thank you for the clarification. Absolutely. But this is all about the division. See, there are things the Cowboys do well, and we can emphasize those things. But what's also true is, in any other division in football, they would not be in the discussion for the best team. In any other division in the NFC, they would not be in the discussion for the second best team. Like, this is about who they have to go up against, who they have to catch, which is why the game this Thursday is so incredibly critical. You mentioned it. Yes, with a win, they're tied for first. With a loss, they're de facto three back with five to play. So with a win, they feel great. With a loss, they're two back in the loss column, and they will have been swept by Washington. So this is the biggest game of the year in the division, and Washington's got to deal with a backup quarterback.
But you got to look at this team and you say, They struggled out of the gate. They struggled early on in the season. If there was any point in the season for them to be hitting their stride, it's right now, where Ezekiel Elliott is getting the touches you want him to get, where Dak Prescott has somehow found a way to make that offense work, where the defense is playing well, and now they just have to get Amari Cooper back into the fold. It seems like everything's clicking for this team.
All those things are accurate. At least they have an identity. We know now when they start, especially based on these last two road wins, which we have to say, they are very impressive. They did all the things that in the previous road losses that they weren't doing. So now when they start the game, we know they have a sense of identity, what they're going to do, how they're going to get the ball to Zeke. The mystery to it is, and I'm going to say, I'm just going to temper my disappointment, how good is Amari Cooper going to be in the last six games? All right? We've given him a couple games. Mm-hmm. We haven't necessarily said anything. We know the transition is very, very tough. But when you trade for a veteran wide receiver and you trade a first-round pick, you are expecting him, after a month in your building, to have a serious impact. Now, what we've seen, and Nick and I watching a couple games together, we've seen they're getting better coverages, so which in turn, it has helped Dak managed the box. It has helped Zeke out as far as get him to that second level. But at some point, Amari Cooper has got to look like a guy who's made the Pro Bowl twice.
Right. You don't trade a first-round pick for a guy because he's going to shift coverage and make things easier for other guys. That's an added benefit to what you trade a first-round pick for, which is for a guy who can have 75-plus yards, a touchdown every other game or so, and be a Pro Bowl-caliber wide
but
receiver.
But, Nick, is that on Amari Cooper? Is that on Dak Prescott? Or is that on this offense trying to work him in?
Right now, I would say we have to put it on all parties. Because we can't say it's not as if Dak was playing great before Amari got there. And it's not as if Amari was playing great before he went over to Dallas. Both Amari had been struggling to have big games. Dak hadn't thrown for over 275 yards all season. So both parties are consistent on that. What has changed for Dallas since they added Amari Cooper is Zeke's gotten the ball more. Zeke's been more effective. And you have seen things open up for Allen Hurns, Cole Beasley, more so than they had early in the year. So it has been it has been a good pickup when you don't consider what they gave up. In order for it to be worth what they gave up, then you need to see what Chris is talking about. You need to see legitimate in-game impact from the play.
In a game like this where you know you're going to have guys like Josh Norman, a lot of one-on-one battles, because you can believe that the tape that the Cowboys have sent out there, teams are going to start to realize we can't stop that running game with seven people in the box. We have to go back to putting eight people in the box. Amari Cooper, that's the time that he should show up. Thanksgiving, that's why you trade for a guy like that. One-on-one, divisional matchups. So I'm looking forward to seeing, I'm expecting them to be able to grow his productivity coming down the stretch.
And one underrated thing about these three Thanksgiving games, the Cowboys obviously playing one of them, an underrated thing about Thursday games all year. Home field advantage in the NFL might not mean as much as it did in years past, but on Thursdays it does. Home teams on Thursdays this year are 9-2. The only home teams to lose are the Giants and the Cardinals, two of the worst teams in the league. So if you're a decent team, being at home on Thursday where you don't have to travel, where the other team really has like the day of recovery, one day to install a game plan, the next day they're traveling, that has been an enormous advantage for the home team. The Cowboys have that working in their favor this Thanksgiving as they do every Thanksgiving.
All right, it'll be Washington in Dallas on Thanksgiving Day. Catch that on Fox. Much more in this game coming up. But on the other side, who is the most dangerous quarterback in the NFL? Jared Goff might have the answer. Next on First Things First. Tune in tomorrow for our First Things First Thanksgiving episode. It'll be the one where we preview all the action on Turkey Day, starting with Washington traveling to Dallas for an NFC East showdown on Fox. You may be off. We can't stay away. Tune in tomorrow morning at 6:30 Eastern here on FS1.
Huge sports day, and I appreciate all the staff working on Thanksgiving to help us get on the air.
Yeah.
Huge sports day on Thanksgiving.
No, we look forward to it. It's going to be a lot to talk about. Fox Sports has teamed up with For the Win for the College Football Fan Index. Each week, you, the fans, will be ranking college football experiences. This week, we're ranking colleges that produce the best pros. So far, USC is leading the way, followed by, you got Alabama and Ohio State. Ohio State produced one sitting right across from us right here. What do you think, Nick, CC?
That's a strong list.
It's a strong list. I think that the SC part of this is more historic than current. I think in 2018, and I'm not trying to placate C, but the answer should be Ohio State. You look at what Ohio State's doing as far as producing superstars in the secondary, unlike almost any other time in school history. But that's a solid list. Iowa, maybe some linemen. Not a lot of stars.
Who's the last star that came out of Iowa?
It's a bunch of offensive linemen. Bunch of great offensive linemen, but nobody that touches the ball. No great. What up, C?
Jenna, that was a great question. We don't have an answer.
No, just for once, I wanted the roles to be reversed.
Yeah,
well, the thing about it. It felt good to be on this side of that one.
I mean, they pretty vanilla with it.
Love the honesty. We're going to get to Patty Mahomes in a second, but first, College Hoops, Wisconsin, Green Bay's Shaquan Hemphill drives down the lane for a nasty one-handed dunk.
I didn't see this game last time. I'm not going to lie to you, America. The first time I'm seeing this. Go get it, Shaquan.
That's one of my favorite courts. There and in Milwaukee. You see how they have the trees and everything printed into the court and everything? They got some. You guys know I watch all different aspects of the video.
Oh.
Duke and Auburn, watch this one. See Jared Harper up to Anfernee McIlmore for the alley-oop right over Zion.
Zion went to. Oh, he almost got it.
Yeah, he was a little late. Now, this was a more contested game than I thought.
Yes.
You know, late into the game, Auburn, Bruce Pearl does a great job there.
Later in the game, Zion gets revenge. Harper goes for the dunk. It does not end well
for him. No. Zion got a dunk-like burst on this block. On the previous block, he didn't get off the ground like we're used to seeing him. This one, he did, glassed it.
It's really exciting to watch him play every game. I mean, he's going to do something offensively or defensively. You're like, did he just really do that? Is that guy 280 pounds? Yes, he is.
And he had it, like you mentioned, Duke didn't blow him out, and he had a quiet game, just 13 points. Those are probably directly correlated.
Back to Monday night's epic showdown. Yes, the Chiefs lost, but yes, the Chiefs won because of number 15. Second-year quarterback Patrick Mahomes is putting together an MVP-caliber season, leading the league in passing yards and touchdowns and smashing Chiefs records in the process, even gaining praise from his opponents with Jared Goff saying, Mahomes is the toughest guy in the NFL to defend right now, including Drew Brees. Nick, is Goff right about Mahomes?
Because of how he phrased it, he didn't say he's the best quarterback. He didn't even say he's playing the best. He said he's the toughest guy to defend. And in that regard, I think he's absolutely right. Nobody this year has taken more shots downfield and been more successful on those shots downfield than Patrick Mahomes. He's doing it while having a completion percentage right around 70%, which if it weren't in the era of Drew Brees, right around 80%, we'd be talking about how remarkable that is. When you also incorporate the fact that when you're defending Patrick Mahomes, you're not doing it in a vacuum. You're doing it where you've got superstars all around the field, I would say he's absolutely correct that the different things Mahomes can do in the pocket, out of the pocket, against the blitz, not against the blitz, deep, short, and intermediate makes him the toughest quarterback to defend, which, again, is a different discussion than who's the best or who's playing the best as far as the most different looks they can give you on film, the most different things you have to be prepared for. I think Jared Goff is absolutely right.
How much of that is because teams are still getting to know Patrick Mahomes, and how much of that is because this guy is something special?
It's a combination of both. Typically, when you see a star player and a future star, there's a lot of things have to come together. And Andy Reid and how he treated last season after they drafted him, they moved up in the draft to get him, a lot like some other teams did. He didn't jump the gun and put him in the first year. He had him sit behind Alex Smith. And the way Alex was able to handle him, that it took a lot of pressure off him. He was able to sit around, be around the NFL, and not take all those hits and really, really learn. And by the way, he is a really, really special talent. So Andy Reid's ability to be patient with him with this organization, the type of talent he was able to collect around him. So when Patty Mahomes got under center, he was with the NFL's leading rusher in Kareem Hunt. So forget about the team speed. Oh, potentially have the best tight end in Kelce. So how they do things and how they orchestrate things, the table has been set for him to be very, very successful in the beginning stages of his career. So that danger part is who's at the range with him? Who's coaching him? What type of formations are they using? How are they attacking? And now, ultimately, how is he performing? And even under duress, we have seen him. If you do blitz him, he can run out of the pocket. So, and he is throwing the ball down the field. This is no dink and dunk offense. So I can understand what he would say as far as the most dangerous right now in the league. Drew Brees is playing great. He has less weapons. Mm-hmm. than Patty Mahomes has there in Kansas City. So it has nothing to do with playing well right now either. It's the danger and how much information you have to consume to try to stop them.
And the you mentioned, you know, how much of it is that he's new, so to speak. And we've seen a lot of quarterbacks that have an awesome first month. Coach Mangini talks about this all the time. Mm-hmm. And then once you get 4 to 5 games of film on them, you see what they can't do. They make them do what they can't do. So Pat Mahomes in his first month, when before Drew Brees really popped, when Pat Mahomes was the leading MVP guy, in his first 5 games of football, 302 yards a game, 14 touchdowns, 2 picks, a 113 rating. In the last 6 games since, 350 yards per game, 23 touchdowns to 8 interceptions, and a 122 rating. So the interception numbers have gone up in the second half of this season, but the touchdown numbers, the yards, the completion percentage, and the rating have all gone up as well. He's ratcheted his game up as defenses have gotten more accustomed to what he wants to do.
Can we just revisit something we haven't since the first week? Why is Patrick Mahomes so good? What is it about him that other teams are having such a hard time with? What does he do that other guys don't do?
Well, it's not only the scheme that Andy Reid's putting him in. He's got tremendous arm talent. He can throw the ball from a lot of different arm angles. Well, people say, well, what's the difference and what's the ability to be able to do that? Most people cannot throw the ball accurately from one arm angle, let alone different arm angles, meaning if you change your arm angle, you're going to be less consistent throwing it. Because he has thrown the baseball and because he's played some shortstop and pitcher, he has developed an uncanny ability, even better than Brett Favre. Brett Favre could throw it at some different arm angles, but Brett Favre going to throw that to everyone.
Yeah, Favre.
I mean, he's going to throw it to the other team also. So it's very, very rare that we're seeing guys able to duplicate the type of spin velocity on the football and be accurate with the football where he's changing. Sometimes I'm coming over the top, sometimes I'm dropping down, and his ability to take advantage of the defense, if you blitz him and you pressure him and throwing the ball deep down the field, that ability right there is pretty special. So one thing, there's no test for it, and I said all those other attributes, but man, he's a gamer. Like, you turn the lights on, and there's some guys, they just have it, and there are other guys, they just don't have it. And Patty Mahomes, to me, like a lot of other young quarterbacks who we said, Carson Wentz, we believe that he had Deshaun Watson. He's got it, and we believe Patty Mahomes has got it, and he's got a great supporting cast.
Explain to the audience why a guy would want to change arm angle. Like, what are the circumstances in which you just explained why it's impressive that he can do it, but explain to the audience why a guy would need to do that.
Patty Mahomes is comfortable, and sometimes when you're throwing the ball through these windows, the offensive lineman, when you're not 6'5", there's windows between the lineman and between their hands that if you go conventional over the top, that ball will get batted down. And sometimes you have linemen, you're trying to throw around them. So there are a few guys that are able to do. Aaron Rodgers does it on occasion. Steve Young did it on occasions. There are guys that can do it. Aaron Rodgers, he has that ability because he also has the arm strength to be able to do it. So you have to have not only ability to be able to confident you can do it, but you got to have a strong arm to be able to do it.
And real quick, just one other thing, because it's odd to hear a quarterback say, this is what I'm seeing from this quarterback, because he's obviously not a defense player watching film. You were saying before the show that sometimes even as offensive players, you would watch other offenses to see things you guys could duplicate, you could steal. So there might actually be times that the Rams and Jared Goff have been watching the Chiefs offense to try to take some things from them?
Yeah, a lot of times we would watch film of Washington Redskins and Joe Gibbs and what they did with their bunch formations and their big receiver groupings. And then also when Peyton Manning, when he came into the league, especially with Tom Moore, you said, what kind of personnel do I have? And there's a lot of people, especially like the Rams, Jared Goff, they try to duplicate. Who's the most similar as far as personnel? That would be Kansas City. And Sean McVay, Andy Reid, all these coaches, they look at other people and what they do. Man, how can I duplicate that? Do I have guys who can do that? And you plug that into your system. So I believe, yes, Jared Goff has seen a lot of Kansas City, what we call cut-ups of the plays that they've run, because there's some overlap to both teams and what they're running offensively.
Didn't Goff and Mahomes' dad both play baseball?
Yeah, that's they mentioned that. Goff's dad was a pitcher, I think.
Yeah.
And Mahomes was a pitcher.
Yeah, he had a short stint in trying. He tried to be a major leaguer. I don't think he had a long career.
He's probably
ultimately being
the NFL.
A firefighter.
There you go. All right, coming up, will LeBron's return to Cleveland tonight prove that the Cavs took him for granted? It's an interesting debate. Next on First Things First. An NFL football Thanksgiving feast will be served up on Fox as bitter NFC rivals battle when Adrian Peterson and company land in Dallas to take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys. That all starts at 4 o'clock Eastern on Fox.
Game of the year in the NFC East.
I'm going to eat some food tomorrow. I'm telling you that.
Died in a long time. Time now for say what? Les Miles was officially introduced as the new head coach for Kansas football Sunday, and I guess you could say he was at a loss for words at the opportunity. Say what?
The opportunity to get out and do community enhancement and be involved with the many things.
Listen.
Man, I'm glad he's back in our lives, man. He gonna eat some grass. He gonna win some games. Go for some bizarre fourth downs. Les Miles, good football coach, see?
Yeah, I'm just wondering how he gonna recruit in Kansas.
Mark Mangino won there. Got Aqib Talib, got Chris Harris. Went to an Orange Bowl. Beat Virginia Tech. Like, Kansas football is one of the worst Power 5 programs in the country, but they got a real coach now.
Well, let me tell you what they didn't win. They didn't win the press conference.
No, they did not.
What were you going to say, Jenna? Could you relate right there?
Yeah, I was going to
That's the way you are every day, speech.
I know. I was going to say, let's do some stories to start your morning. Also, I can relate. Absolutely, so I feel for him. Brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil.
You should have brought up breadsticks, Jenna.
I already did it. That's once a year. MVP hopeful Todd Gurley had a quiet Monday night, finishing with just 55 yards on 12 carries, no scores. We learned he was dealing with an ankle injury. See, how important is Gurley with the display we saw Monday night to this team?
Oh, he's important. I mean, he's the table setter for a lot of things that they did. Now, you don't know those as a defense till after the game. But if you look at that play action, man, they thought he was healthy.
Right.
You know, so as long as he's in there in the NFL game, he can hurt you. And also, late in the fourth quarter, you can see they ran an outside zone. And he hit it like it was 95 going north. So I know he was gimpy earlier in the game, but Todd Gurley is still a special player, even a little gimpy. They can't function without him.
No, and your point is exactly correct, that they knew he was gimpy, but they still used him as a decoy as if he wasn't.
Yes.
And maybe late in that game when they needed the one first down and they ended up calling three pass plays, maybe a fully healthy Todd Gurley, they give him the ball on first down, see if he gets some 6 yards.
And they did that off of play action, though. So right. At least they utilized him that way.
All right, moving on. Bears quarterback Mitch Trubisky is also playing through some pain, with head coach Matt Nagy optimistic Trubisky will be good to go against the Lions Thursday with a shoulder injury. See, how worrisome is it for the Bears if Trubisky isn't healthy?
Well, for one, you're talking about a shoulder, and you're talking about a young quarterback who's been inconsistent. Now, they run a very, very exciting offense. I'm excited to see them on the national stage there versus the Lions, but inconsistency is a part of what he does, and now with the shoulder, I believe this is the type of thing as a young player, even if he's not great, just the overall toughness of playing, he can win his teammates over. So even if they know you're not 100%, but know you're out there with them, you earn a lot of points and stuff with your teammates. So I expect him to be continuing this playoff contention, but I expect him to win over some folks. I expect him to play in this game.
And they, in this past week's game, used him as a running threat more than they had all year.
Oh, he's a good athlete.
He has the second most rushing yards of any quarterback in football this season. So him, I understand this in a lower body injury, but him being less than 100% nursing something is something to watch. They do have who I believe is the best backup quarterback in football in Chase Daniel. If they need him to start a game at some point in the year, but they need him if they're going to make a playoff run.
Why? So you put best backup quarterback.
He's highest paid, best. I think I like Chase Daniel.
Okay.
Eagles wideout Golden Tate has just 7 catches and just 67 yards in his 2 games since joining the team, with Philly's offensive coordinator saying it has been challenging trying to fit him in. See, why is that?
Well, because you've come up, you feel the pressure of the organization because the general manager has made the move. And of course, they come to you and typically ask you, hey, we can get Golden Tate. Would you guys like to have him? Yes, but once you get him there and trying to feature him with some of the other players you have, I still need to get Nelson Aguilar the ball. I still need to get Alshon the ball. I still need to be able to run the ball. So, yes, it is a challenge. But, hey, Mike Groh, that's why you're the offensive coordinator. It's a normal challenge. Every coordinator around the league has challenge. That's a good one, though, because Golden Tate, you can throw the ball sideways and get it to him. You can run reverses, speed sweeps to him. It's not that difficult, Mike Groh.
It's also, though, not surprising that of all the players added during the season or at the deadline, the ones that have made the most instant impact have been defensive players. Demaryius Thomas had one big game, one really big first quarter with the Texans.
Yes.
You had Amari Cooper at the game where they tried to force him the ball and ended up working against him. Golden Tate hasn't really gotten off and running yet. A lot easier to fit in defensive players, particularly pass rushers, but even Eli Apple has been helpful for the Saints in the secondary. Yes. The offensive guys, a lot more work to get them fully involved in the offense.
All right, the Chiefs-Rams Monday night offensive explosion was the must-watch game of the season, unless you're a fan of defense, with Texans all-pro safety Tyrann Mathieu saying the game was tough to watch as a defender. See, what do you make of Honey Badger's comments?
No, I feel Honey Badger. Honey Badger's right. There's a lot of defenders, a lot like him, especially he's an elite defender, because they feel like in a game like that, they can make a difference to be able to slow an offense down. Now, he would love the chance to be able to, but also Honey Badger got Clowney, got J.J. Watt going to be chasing after, so those quarterbacks not going to have as much time. But, of course, as a defender, there's no way that you look at that Monday night game and you enjoy it, because you know every game you are operating at a deficit. You got the referees against you, got the rules against you, the way football has been changed now, that it's a huge advantage being an offensive player. The only thing that's saving you is late in the season and bad weather. That's when you're going to start to see these defenses come back and take advantage of these offenses. But in a good weather, an L.A. Coliseum, dome in New Orleans, man, if you have fair conditions, yeah, they're going to light you up based on the rules that you have now.
Late in the season, bad weather and playoff officiating also could tilt things back towards the defense a bit.
Like, yes, they allow you to be more physical.
Correct. I mean, that's cross sports, really. In the NBA, we talk about it. In the NFL, we talk about it. The refs do not want to have a game littered with flags the way Monday night was in the postseason. So they're going to let you get away with a little more jockeying, a little more hand fighting. I understand what Tyron's saying, but I actually think he would have had an awesome time playing in that football game because of the type of player he is. He's a safety who likes to blitz, get after the quarterback, and he's a ball-hawking safety. Like, I thought this game on Monday was awesome from a defensive perspective because there were so many enormous defensive plays. 7 turnovers in the game, 6 of them forced by a brilliant defensive play. You had 8 sacks in the game, another half dozen TFLs. Like, there were big plays. Now, I feel like all of the good defensive plays were either a sack, a TFL, or a pick, or a turnover, I should say. Mm-hmm. Everything else was the ball going up and down the field. But Tyrann Mathieu would have done well in this football game.
Yeah, this is going to be one of the adjustments. And the players will get adjustments when they start getting better information. This offseason, Sean McVay, Andy Reid, where did they spend a lot of their offseason? College football. That's the reason why they run offense, because they had quarterbacks like that, and they want to be able to put an offense that's friendly around them. So as you start to see the NFL, they will adjust. And I don't believe that Monday night was the norm. I still believe that the standard in NFL is New England, and I still believe that the weather will have an effect in the playoffs. So, yes, we have seen numbers like we've never seen before, but I believe there's going to be a correction, and it's called weather. So I'd like to see how this is going to play out going forward.
All right, let's move on to the NBA now. LeBron James making his return to Cleveland again. This time he'll be wearing a different outfit. It'll be purple. It'll be gold. Lakers facing the Cavs tonight, and as expected, there is drama to be had. But this time it has nothing to do with LeBron. J.R. Smith recently saying the Cavs are tanking, and he's decided as a result to stay away from the team as they look to trade him. Nick, does the Cavs' disastrous 2-13 season so far this year prove that they maybe took LeBron James for granted?
I think it further confirms what we've known about this organization in every year of its modern history that hasn't involved LeBron James, which is that it's not very well run. They don't win games. They don't make the playoffs. And they don't do a good job organizationally of having any consistency, from retaining general managers to having consistency at the head coach to even committing to a plan and sticking to it. This offseason, they told their veterans, they told Kevin Love, we're trying to win right now. Mm-hmm. They told anyone that would listen, we think we can compete to make the playoffs this mm-hmm. year, knowing that if they were to do that, they would lose their draft pick. They said, we don't care. We are trying to win right now. We think Colin Sexton can be an instant starter in this league. And what are they? They're the worst team in basketball. Pardon me. Go ahead, see. I got to.
The reason why Cleveland, it's just hard for us to try to understand what they've done, because they've just been so bad without LeBron. Like, we've seen no organization in no sport with a star be so successful and be at the top of the sport, and that athlete go away and come back. And they still, the same result. It's amazing how similar the Cavs were before LeBron, which was also before Daniel Gilbert. Mm-hmm. And when they lost LeBron to Miami, all the things that Gilbert said, LeBron puts that, forgets about it some type of way. LeBron's better than I would have. You know, I wouldn't have never been able to forget that. He comes back, and ultimately, I'm going to tell you, I don't know how they won a championship. I don't know how LeBron beat Golden State. Like, because if you look at all the chaos and all the truth that's been brought out since LeBron has left, like what really, really, really happened, because all the time before we were blaming LeBron. Oh, LeBron made bad decisions here. Oh, LeBron's picking the players. And that was everything. That was further away from the truth. But now we know. We know LeBron. We know he didn't want Kyrie to leave. We know that he was upset about the general manager leaving. And I hate to say it, but, man, Daniel Gilbert, he has not – no one deserves to have a loser, but, man, he has not done well as far as owning a sports business.
Listen, I know you think that I'm sometimes a little too hard on Dan Gilbert, but the facts are – undeniable that he lucked into LeBron James twice. He did nothing. He wasn't even the owner when they got the number one pick. Mm-hmm. And then he was fortunate enough that LeBron had such a tie to Northeast Ohio, had such a commitment to that area, and had accomplished enough in Miami that he was a made man already, that he could take the chance to go back to a team like that. And he squandered it twice. And it'd be one thing if it was just a fait accompli. LeBron, if he won a title in Cleveland, was definitely going to leave and try to go on to another chapter. That was not LeBron's plan. When LeBron went back to Cleveland, he thought, A, it would take a lot longer than 2 years to win a title, and B, mm-hmm. that he would retire there. But the moment Dan Gilbert got an opening to where LeBron couldn't exert his pressure, the 1 year LeBron was not a free agent in the summer, he went against everything he had committed to. And so he, in my eyes, forced LeBron's hand, and with some of the great reporting from the reporters on the ground in Cleveland, wanted his franchise back, wanted to take control back. But this is what I know about the Cavs. The year before LeBron got there, they won 17 games. The year after he left the first time, they won 19 games. This year, they're going to win somewhere 17 to 19 games. When LeBron was there the first time, he never had a teammate average 18 points a game. 18. Mm-hmm. His best teammate in his first 7 years of his career was Mo Williams. After that, it was Big Z and Larry Hughes. It has been systematic mismanagement. The only reason they were competitive the second time he came back was because they were so bad after he left. They got three number one picks. One was Kyrie. One they could trade for Kevin Love.
Quickly, how do you think the fans are going to respond to LeBron being back?
He's the king. He is always going to be the king.
They'll always welcome him back.
He made them champions. All right? So that's one thing they'll always have with them. LeBron did that. And he fulfilled his part of the promise.
And I was at LeBron's last game in that building, right? He didn't get a hero send-off because it was a blowout, it was the end. They didn't want to really acknowledge that he was potentially leaving. So I think it will be 180 degrees from the first time he came back 8 years ago, which was as intensely negative reaction as anyone has ever gotten. Can I say one thing real quick about the news you mentioned about J.R. Smith?
Yeah.
Listen, J.R. is going to be in the headlines this week for negative stuff. I just want to remind people, my pal J.R., 15 years in the league, 11th all-time in three-pointers, and that championship they won, if he doesn't hit those two huge shots in Game 7 to open the second half, they don't win that game. So JR now is in a different part of his career, but it has been a very solid NBA career with a championship and a Sixth Man of the Year award, and I hope he catches on somewhere because it's not working out for him this year in Cleveland.
JR very much appreciates that. Hey, coming up, any chance the Eagles can bounce back from their embarrassing loss to the Saints? What are you laughing at, Z?
He's laughing at me.
Next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we are joined by the very unpredictable former NFL head coach Eric Mangini. I say that because I said, hey, coach, how was your night last night? Thinking you watched one of 27 games that may have been happening anywhere in the country. You instead were at the Cher concert.
Oh, well, no, at the Broadway.
Whatever, semantics.
A friend of our family is the young Cher, and she's amazing.
Words, words, words. How was Cher?
Cher, the show was fantastic.
Good.
Cher showed up.
There you go.
Cher is not in the show.
I just found that
it's
out.
It's a musical about her.
Okay, well, we're going to take you through
it. Let me guess. Is Bruce Springsteen not in his show either?
No. Okay, get the one outlier.
See? There you go.
He is the show.
That's why I thought that. For those who don't believe in a Super Bowl hangover,
we'll
take
King
a look
Kong
at last week's Eagles performance.
I'm not sharing anymore.
Don't share anything. Mm-hmm. Philly got steamrolled by the Saints 48-7, the worst loss by a defending Super Bowl champion ever. That, my friends, is a football hangover. Eagles now sit at 4-6. They are slowly watching their playoff hopes slip away. Here's Philly's safety, Malcolm Jenkins, on his team's lackluster performance.
It was just embarrassing, you know, quite frankly. It was one of those things that I didn't feel like as a team we had a lot of fight. I'd rather get thrown out of a game than just lay down and take it. And, you know, it was a ton of frustrations. One being, you know, obviously me going back to New Orleans, that's a game that meant a lot to me. But just the demeanor of the team really bothered me. And then just the frustration of having guys that you work hard with and spend a lot of time with get injured. It's just a rough day overall, but you know, at this point in time, we need to figure out some things about ourselves.
What do you mean?
When a team jumps on you like the Saints did and things gets rolling, you find out a lot about yourself. You know, whether you're going to get blown out regardless. You're either going to get blown out swing or you're going to get blown out laying down. And I think you had a little bit of both. I think as leaders of the team, we need to nip in the butt because we're, you know, at that moment where we can't carry non-essential personnel. Not to say that there are guys that aren't playing hard or there are guys that aren't giving it what they got. We just need every drop of it at this point. And we're going to demand that from the top of the roster all the way to the bottom.
Coach, Malcolm Jenkins doesn't think they should carry non-essential personnel, which means he thinks they might have some. What was your reaction to what Jenkins said?
Well, I had different reactions throughout it. And I thought, here's a guy who's going back to a team that he played for, had a lot of success with. And the game might have been a little bit more meaningful and personal to him. So it was hard for him to see other guys maybe not respond the way that he did going into the game. But I do think when you talk about responding to adversity and you talk about dealing with a situation like they were in, which became embarrassing, it goes to controlling your emotions. And here, Malcolm Jenkins, the guy who gets beat on 4th-and-7 for a touchdown, what does he do? He throws up the bird. So that to me is not the best example of controlling your emotions, of providing leadership, of responding the right way. So it's very important when you're in a situation like this to take a step back and say, all right, what can I do differently? I know that he's commenting on other non-essential personnel, other people in the locker room, and maybe there's a lot of truth to that, but what is he doing specific to himself and specific to the situation to help push it forward?
Well, let me ask you this, a kind of counterpoint to that. the things he needs to do specific to himself, he doesn't have to tell the world about. I think as a team leader, is it on the board? Because Jenkins isn't a guy that he's not Jalen Ramsey. He's not a guy that talks a lot of trash about other players. But he is a guy as the lone remaining starter in that secondary, as one of the only guys on the team that had won a championship before the Philadelphia Eagles won one last year, and is one of the oldest players on the team, to maybe put that message out there intentionally as a message to the other guys, knowing, I think those guys see how hard he works, knows that he is handling his business individually, and obviously he needs to play better, everybody does, but is there not something to be said about him trying to set the tone? Not that different than the comments you really liked from Cam Hayward six weeks ago when he talked about either basically get with it or get lost, like get on the page or get off the field. Is there no similarity to you there?
But what else did Cam Hayward say? He said, I don't care if I get another sack the rest of the season. I don't care what my personal statistics are. This needs to happen. And he didn't. That's what I really liked about it, is he was saying, I will do whatever it takes for this to move forward. And I remember with Rodney Harrison, when we had Asante Samuel and Eugene Wilson, two rookies starting in the secondary, and it didn't always go very smoothly. And there were games where he was incredibly frustrated, but he took it upon himself to make sure that he was improving the situation and then not adding fuel to the fire in the locker room, saying, hey, there's some mystery people in this group that I'm pointing to, but not really pointing to. You guys figure it out. It just creates a big, giant distraction.
And ultimately, this league is about winning and losing, Coach. And you know when you win, it covers up a lot of warts and a lot of stinky smell. But when you start to lose, and I said this about Philadelphia, when they start making all those comments of, oh, how much more fun they have, and people are like, oh, yeah, you know, if I want to play, I want to have some fun. I don't want to play in New England. I want to play in Philly. Yeah, right. Let me tell you where you want to play, where you win. Because no place where you're playing, you're losing, are people happy. And are people being called out? Malcolm Jenkins, I've been knowing him a long time. He's been a leader at every level he's been at. High school in the Jersey area, great high school athlete, recruited Ohio State, captain there, high achiever there, drafted in the first round by the Saints, high achiever there. Sean Payton called him one of the big mistakes that they have made from a personnel standpoint, allowing him to leave in free agency. Now a world champion again with the Philadelphia Eagles. So what you saw in that game was a breaking point. Sean Payton went after him. Now, there's a reason why he left there. It might have been money, and Sean might be saying that. But Malcolm Jenkins took it personal, and you're right. He went into the game. It was a little more personal than him. And also, in a blowout, it's fourth down. They didn't have to. They went after him. And that happens in the NFL all the time. So, to me, the reason why he responded in a way that wasn't his normal character, that was his breaking point. And everyone in this league's got a breaking point, and that's what you're starting to see with this team. So, man, it's hard to lead when you're losing. It's hard to lead when you have certain expectations of yourself. You try to pass that on to other people, and the people aren't as responsible. That's what younger players are. So I can understand what he's saying. I'm not making an excuse for it. Right. It's not a behavior that I accept, but that's the way this league is. That was the world champ out there, and Sean Payton, man, gutted him. Throw him up on the bank, didn't care nothing about him. So Malcolm Jenkins, his overall reaction is the overall frustration that goes around this league when you lose, Jim.
So play it forward. What does that mean for the team? How can Doug Peterson or anyone take that and turn it into some sort of positive for where this team is going right now?
Look, there's some truth to what he was saying, too. I didn't think they responded very well
right
to adversity. I didn't think that the energy level and the body language was great when things went south. So that does need to be addressed. There has been a lot of transition on this team. Guys that mm-hmm. were there last year playing leadership roles aren't there. And sometimes we group it as the defending champions, and you think everything's going to be the same. But when you lose that experience and now guys are responding to new situations, that's part of the learning curve, too. And that's got to be coached. You got to coach through, how do we want to respond the next time this happens? What did we do poorly, and what can we change and learn from this loss?
And you mentioned adding fuel to the fire, that potentially one of the negative sides of the comments. I look at the Eagles like this. That fire is raging out of control. Like, they are in a position right now where they are coming off the worst loss for a defending champ in NFL history. Yet, despite all of that, They're two games back in a division where the team ahead of them in first place is starting Colt McCoy at quarterback. Their next three games are all divisional games. They go the Giants, they go Washington, then they go Dallas. They still somehow, 8 wins might win the NFC East. Like, this still can be salvaged at least partially. And I think it's a last resort for Malcolm Jenkins. I think his to use the I think he's like, listen, maybe I am adding fuel, and maybe this is finally slowing it down, because I don't think he's a selfish player. And I know that's not what you were saying. I think he was trying to do what he thought was most important as a leader and as one of the guys on the team who can speak out.
But Chris can tell you this. In the locker room, the players know who's working, who's not working. The players know who's doing the right things off the field when they're at home. Mm-hmm. They know. So if you're a leader, one of the things that you expect as a head coach or as an organization is that you go and spend time with that person. Say, look, this behavior's not acceptable. You're affecting all of us. I would hope that that's what he's doing, as opposed to publicly saying,
yes,
hey, we've got some guys that are doing this.
Yes.
Now it becomes a witch hunt. Who's doing it? Who, you know, why is
it
being done?
And people respect his voice.
They do, and I'm sure guys would respond. The things that he's done in the league, everybody has respect for. So if you're a young player, a guy who's not holding up your end of the bargain, then you should respond to Malcolm as well.
That's what Cher said. Coach, thanks so much. Stick around. More from you. But coming up, can the Cowboys keep up with the Rams and the Chiefs? You know who thinks they can? Jerry Jones. That's next on First Things First.
Where are you at as far as your overall program?
Well, I mean, just talking about where we are right now. I mean, our team is a really focused team. They play really hard. They enjoy each other's company, mm-hmm. as evidenced by, to me, the biggest is how they talk about each other. You know, somebody gives them a compliment. I mean, they're deflecting it over to somebody else.
That was a clip of our own Dave Wannstedt's interview with Jim Harbaugh, and you can catch the rest of that. Winner before Michigan and 10th-ranked Ohio State battle for a spot in the Big Ten Championship. Coverage of this one begins Saturday at 11 Eastern on Fox, or watch anywhere on the Fox Sports app.
Biggest game Jim Harbaugh's coached since the Super Bowl. He's had such a great season after being criticized heavily going into this year and to start the year. If they lose to Ohio State, it undoes it.
Yeah, I think they're going to take this one.
I do, too.
Back here with Coach Mangini on the heels of Monday night's incredible game between the Rams and Chiefs. A lot of teams are wondering if they could compete with the talent that they saw that night. One of the teams you might not put in that category, the Dallas Cowboys, unless, of course, you own the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones knows that tomorrow's Thanksgiving game against Washington is for a share of first place in the NFC East. After that, anything is possible. Here's Jerry with more.
See us in an air out like that. I see us controlling the ball when we're playing at our best. I think that if we got in shootouts, and if you recall back in Romo's days, we were in shootouts. And we could shoot out with the best of them. Elway out here, we got the short end of the stick, but we had one of the greatest games ever with the shootout here, Ramos, next last year. Having said all of that, I think that we can compete, because it wouldn't be the same type of game, I believe. Because if you just assume that you got to score 54 points to win a ball game, then nothing we've seen says we can play at that kind of level.
All right, at least he said that, which we were all wondering. All right, we watched this Monday night game between the Rams and Chiefs, and we said, well, can anyone compete with that standard? But it really is, can you compete with what the Patriots have done week in, week out? Should that be sort of the NFL standard and where the Cowboys should strive for?
I think, Jenna, after, you know, looking at Monday night, and now we come back down to earth, that we can really try to analyze, what is the NFL? Is it really Monday night? Or is it somewhere in between what we've seen last year? Now, we know the new rule changes. We know it's affected the game like we've never seen before. But let's not overreact to Monday. Because also Monday, I don't believe, late in November, late in December, January, that you can play that type of football. As a wide receiver, I know as it gets colder and the weather gets below freezing, you can't throw a football 50 times a game and try to be as effective as running the football. So you can't do the same things. The footing on the surface, regardless if they say, oh, man, it's synthetic. It's still cold. That synthetic, it doesn't want to be cold. It performs better when it's 72. So the speed of the game has to slow down because the footing of the game, Kansas City, it's going to be cold and windy. So the cold and the wind have something to do with transferring the ball through the air. So you can't pass it as well as they did on Monday night. Pittsburgh, if they get the number one or two seed, it's going to be cold and chilly there. Now, we saw last year in the Jacksonville game, they were able to move the ball up and down the field, but it wasn't like Monday night in New England. If they happen to get the one or the two seed, they are the standard in the league. Because if you give Bill Belichick 1 or 2 weeks to prepare, you're not going to be able to. There's not going to be a receiver that's going to have 200 yards of offense against him, and he's going to limit some of the things that you try to do offensively, and you know they're going to play better red zone defense than both of these teams.
But one thing that all three of those teams have in common that you mentioned is they are all in the AFC. And when Jerry Jones talking about can these guys compete with the Rams and Saints, those are teams in the NFC. And the reason I mentioned that is those are also teams that you're not going to. The Saints play in a dome. The Rams play in L.A. The Cowboys play in a pseudo-dome. Like, those are three places where the conditions wouldn't be a factor. So, I am curious in this specific example, the Cowboys against these two teams.
Jerry Jones was right because he's also got the personnel. Jerry Jones has built his team the right way. I like that defense. I don't believe that the Rams would be able to run up and down the field. I don't believe the Saints would be able to run up and down the field on the Dallas' defense, on the Vikings' defense. So, no, I don't believe that the playoffs are going to be like Monday night's game. But I just think that as sports fans, everyone saw the Monday night game and they ran away with that. But let's not get carried away. There's a reason why they got five of those trophies up there in New England. And if you think no team, no coaching staff has adapted to the rule changes in the last 15 years better than Bill Belichick. So I had to talk about them because they are the standard of the league. We have seen playoffs where they've been explosive. If you have home field advantage in Arizona, we've seen them where they ran off some point. Aaron Rodgers on the road in the playoff, he's run off some.
Carolina,
you know, they've been explosive. So, but I don't think the whole league is what we're going to see on Monday night, Coach.
And when I first saw this question, I thought, okay, there's no way Dallas can run with these teams. But that's not really what Jerry said. What I like that Jerry said, and it's indicative of the fact that they are understanding who they need to be. He was saying we're going to play good defense, we're going to control the ball, and we're going to change the narrative of these games. We're not going to get into this type of fight with that type of team. We're going to get into the fight that we want to have. And that, to me, is an extremely important part of this. If they can play the way that Dallas wants to play and needs to play, then they have a chance with every single team because they look at the Rams, 273 yards a couple weeks ago.
Against them rushing, yeah. Seattle.
Coach Mangini's talking about the constant philosophy of you're going to play the game on my terms. It's just like in the NBA. You can't play Golden State. You can't play up and down. You can't play the three ball with them. And Coach Mangini says going out there from a philosophy standpoint, I'm going to make the Rams. They're not going to be able to play that style because I'm going in with a ball control. I'm also going to do some things defensively. I'm not going to put my safety one-on-one 5 yards off the line of scrimmage in the most critical down and allow them to have that explosive play. So, yes, we're going to control the tempo of the game.
But here's the thing. Jerry's right. They're not going to have a chance to compete if it's 54 points to win. What if it's half that to win? What if it's 27? What if you got it? Like, what do we realistically think a great defense? Let's call the Cowboys defense in 2018 a great defense by this year's standards. They're top five in most categories, so at least a very good defense. What do we think they could hold a Saints or a Rams team to? 27?
Well, this is the thing, too. I got to be careful. Dallas only turned the ball over 10 times this year. Mm-hmm. Is Kansas City going to turn it over 5 times? Because you give Dallas and you give Ezekiel them extra 5 possessions, How many yards rushing do you think they're going to have against that and eat up that clock?
Sure. And that was an outlier game for all parties. Five turnovers isn't.
Well, 50 points is an outlier.
Absolutely right. But
and I think it depends on how they get to the points they get to and how Dallas responds in those situations. So if they go up 14-0, the Rams or whoever go up 14-0, and Dallas responds by, oh, we got to throw the ball every single down. We got to get an empty. We got to be someone that we're not. Then that 14 can go to 35 in a heartbeat. But if they can get to the point, if they can stay true to their identity and climb back into those games, to me, that's a much better approach. It's the response to different situations. And I think early in the season, you saw Dallas not being who they needed to be and how much that affected them.
And that's what Seattle, in the game you mentioned, they were, it was a one-score game against the Rams, and then Fowler makes the strip sack. They end up scoring to go up 12. It's 5 minutes left in that football game. Seattle's still running the football. Seattle, even in, and by the way, they were in position to win that game late. They got the ball back. So they stayed true to themselves, even in a spot where two scores, 5 minutes left, you feel like you have to pass. So there have been teams that have looked at the Rams, and we'll see about the Saints. The Saints defense the last 2 weeks has played its best football of the year, allowing 14 and 17 points. But who thinks there are things they can exploit against that Rams defense in particular? But it is ultimately very hard for me to think of a scenario where if at any point Dak Prescott's got to match points that he has any shot. It would be about the defense forcing some of those turnovers the way the Rams did to the Chiefs and the way the Chiefs did to the Rams for that matter. It would be about Zeke being able to be consistent with that running game. But I also think we have to be fair here. The Rams and Saints are without question two of the three best teams in football. That's who they are. The Cowboys, we don't know if they're one of the two best teams in their own division.
One thing Denny Green always taught me, man, we had a lot of private meetings, and God rest his soul. He used to tell me, Chris, we're going to be a high-flying offense. Our defense going to be undersized, going to try to get after the quarterback. But, man, one day it's like basketball. We can't put the ball in the bucket, Chris. We're going to lose no matter where we play. So Patty Mahomes and them, they're going to have some cold days. Can they win a game when they're off? Because they're not going to be completing 80%, 75% every game. And in the NFL, that's what it becomes. Tom Brady's off for 2.5, 3 quarters, and then he catches fire. Can these quarterbacks, when they have those off days, can they be as effective as we saw Monday night? I don't think so. So that's what we're going to have to answer as we get into the playoffs.
All right, Coach, we'll see you a little bit later on. Got to take a break. Coming up, is this Kevin Durant's last season with the Warriors? That's next. First things first. Tune in tomorrow morning for our First Things First Thanksgiving episode. It'll be the one where we preview all the action on Turkey Day, starting with Washington traveling to Dallas for an NFC East showdown on Fox. You guys may be off at home. We cannot stay away. Tune in tomorrow morning, 6:30 Eastern on FS1.
Looking forward to it. It's going to be a great Turkey Day show.
One of the best sports days of the year.
And then I'm going to eat like it's the Last Supper.
All right, we'll get to KD, Kevin Durant in a second, but first, college hoops, Wisconsin, ooh, Green Bay, Shaquon Hemphill driving down the lane.
Well, go ahead, Shaquon. I mean, you got to try to block that. You got to get in front of the rim.
Man, he went two-handed and missed it. He went up with both hands
for
the block.
He's behind the rim, though. You got to get out from the restricted area. Get in front of the rim.
This is where C's going to say defensive players aren't as smart as offensive players.
Well, I'm not saying that's in football. In basketball, they're playing both ways. So their brains are getting exercised. Yeah. Come on.
They get dumber when they don't have the ball.
Smart guy.
Duke and Auburn, Jared Harper lobs it to Anthony McLemore for the alley-oop. Right over who, C? Zion.
Zion was on help defender. He couldn't necessarily get in the picture on this one quick enough. But if Zion had known they were going to throw an alley-oop, he didn't know.
That's the lowest I've ever seen Zion get off the ground. That seems like a quarter jump for him. I feel like we're about to see the full jump.
There it is. Zion gets his revenge. Jared Harper goes for the dunk. It does not end well for him.
Yeah, he knew he was going to try to finish strong on this one. Zion got a heads up. Mm-hmm. Got some momentum going in this. It's exciting to watch him play offensively, defensively. He makes at least a play a game to be like, never seen that.
This was an important game, I feel like, for the psyche of the other 325 Division I college basketball teams. Because Duke wasn't dominant. Zion wasn't dominant. Like, they were playing a good but far from great Auburn team, and it's an 8-point game. Like,
And they're freshmen. They're going to have some days that they're going to miss. They're going to miss a lot of shots, and you're going to have a chance to upset them.
Moving on to the Golden State Warriors now. The team is currently on a 3-game slide. That should be the focus. But instead, the talk is where Kevin Durant will play next season, with Draymond Green bringing this to the forefront. of their altercation last week. But when Durant was asked if the spat would affect his future, he said, "Nah, because at the end of the day, I'm just a ball player that's just trying to be in a great environment to play basketball and groom my skills every day. And I want to compete on a level that once the game starts, I'm just totally comfortable with my surroundings, with just going out there and being me. I never really felt like it was a problem because I know Dre, and he says some crazy stuff out of his mouth all the time. But on top of that, it was just that there was so much coming from it from the outside and so much stuff that we have to answer now." I bet you guys, if you closed your eyes, were like, is KD here?
Yeah. I liked how in the beginning you were trying to sound like Durant, and then you pivoted to Jenna Wolf. Smart.
See, you buying that the little spat with Draymond won't impact Kevin Durant's decision for next year?
Well, if KD had already made up his mind, then no, it wouldn't affect him. And also, he's telling the truth. If his mind is not made up and someone called you the things they called you, and even he thought it was offensive when he explained it. And he said, even from Draymond's standard, what he said was a lot. So KD said a lot in this. I don't believe it's going to affect him. I believe that he was going to leave, and I believe that Draymond knew that. Most of the time, when people, especially your family or people close to you, they know the truth. And Kevin Durant hadn't been telling us the truth. And KD, this is a tough decision. Like, his basketball future and all that, being comfortable. But what really makes him comfortable? And how is there a better environment than in Golden State for him? So, you know, KD, he let us in a little bit on the insight. I think his mind was already made up, Nick. And this is a part, just a subplot as we finish the 2018-19 season.
The only way what happened with Draymond Green, the only way what Kevin Durant's saying is true and that what happened with Draymond Green does not impact him is, as C said, if he already knew what he was doing. And I don't believe he was certain what he was doing. I don't believe right now he is totally certain with what he's doing, which is why, of course, that would affect him. Like, we do have to remember at times that NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball, these are workplaces in this regard. How much you like your coworkers, how much fun it is to come to work, how much respect you get from your coworkers is going to impact anyone who has options with what they decide to do, where they are going to work. And so your joy of coming to work has an enormous impact on how much you want to stay at that workplace. And so I don't believe Draymond went into the season Durant went into the season knowing definitively he was out at Golden State. I think he was leaning towards leaving. Now, I understand a lot of people are now speculating it's the Lakers. That would shock me. That would be Durant would be going from one place where he doesn't get credit to another place where he wouldn't get credit. Like, I don't understand the Lakers part of it, aside from the fact they have cap space, but I think he was leaning towards going to the Knicks. And when you've got one of the leaders of the team call you out your name and say, leave, get out of here. Like, I compare it to this workplace, any workplace, but, like, we are all good friends. And I would, Chris, I've said, is one of my closest friends in the world. We have had our rough moments, a couple on the air, a couple off the air. But if at any point Chris looked me in my eye and said, don't need you. But, like, when you joke about Chris Candy, and you're about to make a joke right now, I see your lips curling up.
Oh, well, I mean, speak the truth.
but if in a moment of anger, Chris looked me in my face and said, don't show up tomorrow, we won't miss a beat. Like, you're going to carry that with you, man. You can't brush that off if you feel the other person meant it.
Right. It's hard to be in an environment, especially where he don't have to. KD's got his choice.
But that's the key with what Nick said. He's got options.
I mean, and he's got the hardware. He didn't have that before. So him going there and getting the hardware, getting those championships, getting those MVP in the finals against LeBron. Now, if it had been some other teams and everything, I would say, hey, KD might need to maybe stay in Golden State to validate himself. But going against LeBron in the finals gave KD a certain amount of validation. So I believe it's on the board because he's trying to grow his game. And I just believe he doesn't want to be in the most stressful environment. That's just not KD's deal.
And there's so much about work, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, is joy.
And there is no regular season joy in Golden State. That's one of the trade-offs they made. There is no such thing as a good regular season win.
Yeah.
There really isn't such thing as a good playoff win until the finals. Like, it is a slog. It's a lot of winning, but not a lot of great moments. Mm-hmm. You do the funny math with LeBron. He gets two championships for the one in Cleveland. He gets a championship if he wins MVP in year 16.
Yes.
Like, if Kevin Durant goes to New York City, I don't say this because I live here. If he goes to New York City, delivers them their first title since 1973, Chris Carter math might say that's worth three. Like, to take that franchise, which has been a name with no success.
Oh, and you think that is going to finally make Durant happy?
Well, listen.
That would be special.
I don't know.
I think he knows the value of it. And Durant, he's got a little money making in him, too. He's got some people around him that he realized.
Makes a lot of money.
He could. New York he is a spot he can make the most impact and the most cash.
Well, and that is one of the things Golden State's throwing at him and trying to recruit him with. It's one of the reasons they had him do the Chase Center thing, was that billionaire's road they're going to have. Because he can make get a lot of angel investors, seed capital, and venture capital stuff. But, Jenna, you asked a question that is, I mean, not really even for a sports television show. What makes someone happy?
I don't even think he knows what he wants or what would make him happy.
I don't mean to be rude. Do you know what makes you happy? Like I mean,
besides you, it's a very short list.
It's a tough. Do I know what makes me happy? I don't know. Like the human condition's a tough one, right?
I know.
But from a basketball legacy standpoint, it is going to New York is the move. Now, what makes someone happy?
Hey, I got more experience than y'all. Let me tell you something.
All right, go.
I know what makes people happy.
Go. All right? Let's hear it.
I know what makes me happy. I know what makes it do what it do. I know what tickles my fancy.
Go.
All those things.
Well, what is it?
Yes, all those things.
Give it. What?
Money, food, all those things, location, all those things. Hey. Listen, Kevin Durant knows what makes him happy.
He's got all those things right now who don't seem happy, is Jenna's point. He's rich now. He's in a great location
now. He's got a title.
Now.
He's got the MVP. He's got
he
money.
Don't have credit.
He give me
doesn't
more
have
credit.
They ain't giving him credit.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's a joy to work with you, too.
Thank you, Jenna.
What you're getting at. We spent 15 minutes trying to get to that. Coming up, are the defending champion Philadelphia Eagles already a total bust this season? Next on First Things First. Go viral. The Warriors are going to be without Steph Curry through the weekend, still dealing with that groin injury. But while KD and Draymond clash, it appears Steph has found a new line of work. Steph and his tattoo artist switched roles, with Steph grabbing the ink and tattooing his signature on the artist's leg. He later promised Steph on social media he wouldn't sell his leg on eBay.
What are you doing, guy? What are you doing? Not Steph, the fella. But now has a tattoo. I mean, I guess he's got a lot of tattoos.
What do you mean? First of all, can I just tell the audience something? I have no doubt that if CeCe came up to you and said, hey, man.
Oh, watch it.
I want to tattoo something on your leg. You'd be like,
Wait. That ain't on CC brand. No. Put some other example.
Jenna.
Michael.
Okay, that was
listen.
First of all, Jenna just wanted to throw her leg up on the table.
Yeah.
Like, where's some burlesque? Second of all, what are you talking about?
Oh, come on, Nate. 100%.
Jenna,
if CC seriously came up to you.
Jenna.
Tell me.
Okay?
Yeah.
If I'm going to put my autograph on something, I need a better canvas.
How do I take all these L's on this?
Like, sorry, Nick.
This is
sadly,
I'm gonna reveal confidence is left and right if you don't right now look into the camera
and dial
and say,
that back.
I retract that statement.
I so much want to. I really want to dial it back.
What's your pre-show routine?
Anyway.
What's the pre-show routine? I will reveal. Look into the camera and
you know what? Just for sake of whatever it is, I'm gonna dial it back.
Good job.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. Time for stories to start your morning.
Yes.
Love you guys.
Yeah. Hair raised up
brought
on your
you
arm
by
there for
the
a moment,
unexpected
didn't it?
Energy of ExxonMobil. Yes. LeBron James making his return to Cleveland when the Lakers face the Cavs tonight. J.R. Smith recently saying this Cavs team, they're tanking as the team's looking to trade him. Nick, did the Cavs take LeBron for granted now that you've seen what they did this year?
I don't think his teammates did. I don't think the fans did. I think the only person who mattered did, though, Dan Gilbert. Dan Gilbert last year said he was excited to take control of his team back, told everyone that would listen, hey, buy your tickets. Get your season tickets now. We're going to compete for the playoffs. Kevin Love, stay. We're going to compete for the playoffs. You're going to compete for the worst record in basketball, just like you did the year before LeBron got there and the year after LeBron left the first time.
It's no doubt. They definitely took him for granted. You make a great point. The fans didn't. The fans, I believe, have been more than fair when LeBron came back there. It's unfortunate. We see this in sports. Sometimes you have a great player, one of the greatest ever, and the ownership around them, they don't support him that way. Michael Jordan, man, we know he won 6. He could have won 7, 8, 9. But they had some issues there. That's what forced him out of Chicago also, Jenna.
All right, moving on to the NFL. Now, Mitchell Trubisky is playing through some pain. Head coach Matt Nagy optimistic that Trubisky will be good to go against the Lions Thursday with a shoulder injury. CeCe, how worrisome is it for the Bears if their quarterback isn't healthy?
Well, it's worrisome because he's been inconsistent throwing the football, but he is a running threat, Nick. So a lot of times when you have a guy that's going to utilize his legs and you realize, man, if I get through this Thanksgiving, I kind of got a mini bye. So I got some extended time. This is an important divisional game. I believe sometimes you try to win your teammates over in a divisional game like this. You play with an injury maybe that you wouldn't play with. And I think the Trubisky should be trying to do that on Thanksgiving, Nick.
With that said, they are in a position no team has ever been in league history. And I know it's just a matter of hours, but they played Sunday night. They now play Thursday at 12:30 on the road. This is the fewest hours between NFL games any team's ever dealt with. So if you are dealing with an injury, it's going to be very difficult to be at.
Now, the league did throw them a little solid. It's one of the shortest trips, from Chicago to Detroit. That's a little short little,
puddle jumper.
Yes.
4 in a row. For those who don't believe even a Super Bowl hangover, take a look at the Eagles. Philly got steamrolled by the Saints 48-7. The worst loss by defending Super Bowl champ ever. Eagles now sit at 4-6, slowly watching their playoff hopes slip away. Here's Philly safety Malcolm Jenkins on his team's lackluster performance.
It was just embarrassing, quite frankly. It was one of those things that I didn't feel like as a team we had a lot of fight. I'd rather get thrown out of a game than just lay down and take it. It was a ton of frustrations. One being, obviously me going back to New Orleans, that's a game that meant a lot to me, but just the demeanor of the team really bothered me. And then just the frustration of having guys that you work hard with and spend a lot of time with get injured. It's just a rough day overall, but, at this point in time, we need to figure out some things about ourselves.
What do you mean?
When a team jumps on you like the Saints did and things gets rolling, you find out a lot about yourself. Whether you're going to get blown out regardless. You're either going to get blown out swing or you're going to get blown out laying down. And I think you had a little bit of both. I think as leaders of the team, we need to nip in the butt because we're, at that moment where we can't carry non-essential personnel. Not to say that there are guys that aren't playing hard or there are guys that aren't giving it what they got. We just need every drop of it at this point, and we're going to demand that from the top of the roster all the way to the bottom.
See, what do you think about what Malcolm Jenkins said?
Well, Malcolm, and this is the truth about the NFL, that losing is very difficult, and when you win, the things you see, the things are going wrong, you cover over them, you gel over them, but when you lose, man, it's painful. Like I've always been taught. You don't get paid in this league to play. You get paid to win. And, man, you can be embarrassed. You can be humiliated, even being a great player like Malcolm Jenkins is. And he's a high performer. He's been a high performer in high school here in New Jersey. A great athlete, went to Ohio State, great there, captain there. Drafted by the Saints, won a championship there. Unfortunately, they didn't sign him. Sean Payton says that's one of the missteps that they've had from a personnel department, probably one of the biggest mistakes that him and Mickey Lomas has made since they've been there was Malcolm leaving. But you could see that he got humiliated. It's fourth down. Sean Payton and them up by 30?
Yeah.
They go for it, throw a touchdown pass against him. And you know his reaction? Man, he flipped them to number one. And it wasn't your number one. It's I'm humiliated, I'm embarrassed. And the rest of the organization, they got to be embarrassed by this performance. Oh, they bragged all offseason. The coach wrote a book. Man, we had guys sit here. Oh, man, it's great in Philadelphia, man. How they support the players. Yeah, what they do in New England. Yeah, they don't have a good time. We have a good time. Hey, how good of a time are they having right now?
Right.
Right? At 4-6. And they still got a chance to be able to salvage their season because this is a unique year. But what Malcolm Jenkins, that's the leadership speaking. Forget what Doug Peterson, what he's been saying. Malcolm Jenkins is one of the leaders there. There's a reason why. We haven't heard from Lane lately. because their leaders aren't speaking. At least Malcolm, he did put a name to the voice, and that should be how the locker room should feel.
And listen, while they, after the bye, I thought their season could go this way and ended up going this way. They're two worst as far as most, I think, emotionally, and then in the Saints game, physically devastating game to the season, where they're two games after the bye. Despite all that, because what C mentioned, because they're in the NFC East, because Alex Smith broke his leg, because the Cowboys can't throw the football, they're very alive. Their next three games are against divisional opponents, Giants, Washington, Dallas. Like, if they get it turned, if they win three in a row, and I know that's for a team that's 4-6, that's a tall task to ask, but they're right there. They win three in a row, they could be in first place in the division in 3 weeks. And I, what I believe is, because of what I know about Malcolm Jenkins, my guess is this is a message he has shared privately that he is now going public with. I think one thing that's unfair that we do with athletes or coaches at times is we hear them say something and we just say, well, why didn't you go to the person? Why didn't you just keep it in-house? And sometimes that's a very fair criticism. But sometimes the answer is, man, I did that. I tried that and it wasn't working. I tried to go to these guys individually and they didn't respond. So now I'm doing everything other than naming names, because I think this is break glass in case of emergency. This is last resort stuff for a team whose house is on fire and they're trying to put it out and salvage the season.
But it's not as if Malcolm wasn't aware of the pitfalls of winning. He's one of the few guys that got some Super Bowl experience before what happened in Philly. He won Super Bowl in New Orleans. And from the beginning, remember they started putting the banners up in the locker room, the world champs? This was before the season. He told them, no, we're not defending that. Like, we can't do that every day. So he was up on this. He realized what was happening, and these are some of the things. It's hard to repeat in the NFL more than the other major league sports, and the reason why the schedule is that way, the reason why, because of parity, and because the reason why, man, every week teams are gunning for you and to be able to take that crown away from you. And that's what the Eagles didn't know about that they thought they did.
All right, time now for a new segment. Call it Nick Makes a List.
Okay.
This is the first you're hearing of this, Nick.
We're going to add this to the show. We're going to give Nick a chance, because he's always, when I come here, he's like my wife. Hey, I'm going to the grocery store. I got a list for you. No, just tell me what you need. So all Nick is great at lists. This is our first try at this, Nick. Okay.
America, let me just, a little backstory. Nick loves lists. Everything is a list. CC isn't so sure. He plays along.
Nah.
Nick, you were inspired by Monday Night Football. All right, so what list did you come up with after watching that game?
There are seven teams right now that can win the Super Bowl. 7-7 only. Don't listen to people's top tens, top eights like I like. There are seven teams. I'm going to go from the bottom up.
Number seven?
Why? Because those don't.
Because you really believe that.
Because these are the seven.
So my list will vary. You'll have sometime three, sometime five.
We might have a top 14 players in the NBA. I dropped that list on Blake Griffin once.
Okay.
The New England Patriots are number seven. Why are they on that list? Only out of respect. A team that's lost three road games by double digits against mediocre teams shouldn't be on the list, but I can't have my first list not have the Pats on there.
They got to be higher because they're the standard of the NFL.
No,
you're starting off wrong.
Okay, no, they're
already
only
on. You're wrong.
Only, they're only on there at all because they're standard of the NFL.
Okay.
Number six, Chicago. I have a good friend, a Hall of Fame source, that says in the playoffs, the weather gets colder. Rules change a little bit, so I got to include the team with the best defense in football that has a sneaky outside shot of getting the two seed in the NFC, forcing people to come to Soldier Field.
I like the fact you got the weather baked into there.
Number five, the Chargers. Awful loss this week, but they got Joey Bosa back now. Phillip Rivers playing the best ball of his career. They also, with the Chiefs loss, they could sneak into a bye in the AFC. Now we're talking about the real cream of the crop, the Pittsburgh Steelers, one of the hottest teams in football, one of the best coaches. We know Big Ben, defense playing better, and then the three best teams in the world. The Los Angeles Rams, why are they not higher? I don't like their defense at all. Number two, the Kansas City Chiefs. Why are they not higher? Only because the Saints are absolutely on fire. Those three teams, almost assuredly, one of them will win it, but if they don't, it'll be one of those other four. That's it. The other 25 teams, pack it in.
Pack it in.
Pack it in. So you don't see your name on that list, Carolina, get out of here. Vikings, see you later.
So those Carolina and the Vikings, they would have been like 8 and 9 and everything.
No, because it's a 17 list.
No, I understand
that. Everyone else is in zeros.
Okay. All right, I got you.
If I thought nine teams could win it, I would have gone nine.
That's why you wore your new little three-piece to break out your little list.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going to try it. No problem. It's not a power ranking. It's Nick's list.
Nick's list.
Okay.
Next one might be I don't know, best receiver's name, Carter.
Could be anything.
It could be top four people I enjoy talking to on this show. Chris, Mangini, Canny, Art Scott's good.
Hilarious.
If we're
going to
go, we want to go six.
Right,
I like Goose. I like Mr. Tickles.
Just say it.
I like Joe.
God.
Dusty's not bad all the
Coming
time.
Coming up, you'll never guess who Jared Goff thinks is the most dangerous quarterback.
Top two people I've seen in a pink dress today. Those two ladies outside.
The British lady. He loves the British lady.
No, you love the British lady. An NFL football Thanksgiving feast will be served up on Fox as bitter NFC rivals battle when Adrian Peterson and company land in Dallas to take on Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys. It all starts at 4 Eastern. On Fox.
Jenna, give yourself a break. Let's eat tomorrow. Let's have a feast.
Not sure I'll be hungry, but
it's Thanksgiving, Jenna. We got a lot to be thankful for. The show's being successful.
Listen, let's put it this way. I've been dieting since birth. Maybe I could take one day
off.
Yeah,
you should
tomorrow.
Do that.
All right.
Goodness gracious, give the hammers a rest.
Okay, that's what I'll do. I'll give the hammers a rest. Back here with Coach Mangini, we're talking Monday night's
that's
epic showdown.
That's a tremendous compliment.
Yes, the Chiefs lost, but yes, the Chiefs won because of that guy, number 15, second-year quarterback Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes putting together an MVP-caliber season, leading the league in passing yards and touchdowns, smashing Chiefs records in the process, even gaining praise from his opponents, with Jared Goff of the Rams saying, Mahomes is the toughest guy in the NFL to defend right now, and that includes Drew Brees. Coach, is Goff right about Mahomes? Not saying he's the best quarterback. He's saying he's one of the toughest to defend.
I was trying to figure out whether Goff has ever played defense ever in his life to make that statement in terms of who the toughest guy is to defend and how much background he has on putting together a scheme.
Right.
And I don't know how much he was watching the game last week.
Coach, I love you. I came in this morning and said, very, very similar.
But you've got so remove who said it, because you've got a lot of experience putting together schemes. So what's your opinion?
I think that Drew Brees right now is as tough as anybody to defend. He's got a 10% higher completion percentage. He's been sacked 50% less than Mahomes has been sacked. And he's got 9 less interceptions. So you're talking about a guy who's been incredibly efficient in an offense that is going to provide shifts and motions and multiple personnel groups, who understands coverages. So if you disguise, he still has a chance to get the ball to the right place. What Mahomes does is electric, and he has the ability to make plays outside the pocket, and he can run. There's a lot of exciting things that he does. But from a full scheme perspective, Drew Brees is as tough as it comes. And look, dealing with Tom Brady, if you're going to put together a cohesive defensive plan and try to fool him and play chess, he's much harder to deal with.
In 2018, Brady is not harder to deal with than Patrick Mahomes. And you can't even use the interception numbers in that regard, because Brady, through his first 7 games of the year, turned the ball over every single game. Now, his last 3, he hasn't. And his last 3, as he's been more cautious, he has had 1 total touchdown. Like, the Drew Brees thing, while I disagree with, given the volume that Mahomes is putting up, given the different looks they have as far as personnel-wise, I think the better talent around him, I do think he is harder. But the Brees is hard to argue with because he's having such a historic season. But if Pat Mahomes this year doesn't win the MVP, it'll be the best year any player has ever had at the position without winning the MVP.
Dante Culpepper's year is a year I would compare to. That was Peyton Manning's amazing year.
Absolutely. But this year, we're now through 11 games. Pat Mahomes is on pace for 54 touchdown passes. That would be second all time. 5,300 passing yards. That would be third all time. A 118 rating. That would be fifth all time. I understand the
I guess I wasn't trying to be a prisoner at the moment. I was trying to look at the whole picture of the quarterbacks and what they presented. And you can argue the MVP, who's had 2 really big games and lost both of them, you could argue that that's definitely a very compelling argument.
Yeah,
I was just trying to look at it as more of a global
perspective.
Well,
I would say the road game at the Chargers is a really big game. I think they won that. The road game at the Steelers strikes me as a big game. They won that. The game against Cincinnati, when Cincinnati was at the time 5-2 or 5-3, and they beat them by 35 points, they won that. They have had 2 games that they lost.
But this game was supposed to be the game of the year.
And all they did was put up 51 points.
I know, and then there was a 2-minute drive. There are 2 2-minute drives at the end of the game that he threw.
Interceptions on both.
Interceptions
on both of them.
All right,
I mean, Coach makes a good case, but when you're talking about who I want to face, in absent of Jared Goff, but if you're a defender, if you're a defensive coach, one thing that coach is terrified of, he's terrified of the unknown things that he believes that Drew Brees and Tom Brady are going to know. That the problems with a certain defense, the problems with certain coverages, they're going to know those things. Patty Mahomes, is Patty Mahomes going to be a star, or is he going to have a season like Dante Culpepper did? You know, like Deshaun Watson, he had a great half a season, but he hadn't been able to duplicate that. So coach is going by what these guys have done, also what they've done under heat, and I know I got some things I got to throw at them where there is a weakness. I know they're going to know that, because in talking to Drew Brees, I'm like, Drew, how the heck can you get more accurate as you get older? He said, Chris, I know every weakness in the coverage. I know every pattern in our passing tree that we're going to do, where I need to go to the hot, how to get rid of the football so I don't get into trouble. And those types of little small details, you're not going to know that when you have not played. So the totality of formation, speed, and what Kansas City gives me, compared to what Drew Brees and Sean Payton, I can understand why you make a case for both of them. But you also have to understand, in playoff football, these great quarterbacks, understanding where their weaknesses, that kind of intel is more valuable than just pure talent. And, by the way, these guys with this information, they're also very, very talented.
And it's not a knock on Mahomes. He just hasn't. In order to get experience, you have to go through
right.
it.
No, of course. Right.
Which every is what... quarter. Tom Brady, we criticized him after 3 Super Bowls. We kept criticizing, oh, man, this is a Belichick. Belichick's more important. They won 3 Super Bowls. They could have had any quarterback. So why wouldn't we do it? We're just right in the moment with Patty Mahomes. So he's getting the same thing Deshaun Watson got last season.
Right, and the reason that, and as we get further into the season, like we get to a point where the only fair criticism of Mahomes is things that are out of his control because he can't control time. He can't make himself a 5-year pro. He can't get the 80 games that you would like to see because he's in game 12 of his career. He's in game 11 of the season. What I do know is this, that through 5 games of the year, when he was starting to become an MVP candidate, we were saying, let's see once they have a month's worth of film on him what he turns into. And through 5 games, he was averaging 300 yards passing per game, 14 touchdowns, 2 picks, 113 rating. Since then, 350 yards passing a game, 23 touchdowns, 8 picks, and a 122 rating. So once they've gotten film, he's gotten better.
Nick, Randy Moss scored 17 touchdowns his rookie year. You know what I told him? I need to be able to see if you can do it over the long run. I need to see if you can do it 2 years in a row. It's all a part of professional football and us evaluating. But we have had Dante Culpepper. We have had guys have amazing seasons but not go on to amazing careers. So it's not as if we have not seen this before.
Well, never quite to this level. Not quite to this level. We've never seen a guy have this type of season and not go on to a great career. That hasn't happened. And Dante was, it wasn't his first year, and he suffered a traumatic knee injury.
Yeah, so Dante had 2 years.
Absolutely. But for him, I feel it was a traumatic knee injury.
Yeah, but it doesn't happen to his arm.
Absolutely.
When I look at greatness and guys that you'd want to play against or not want to play against, I think, okay, how would this player work on another team? And I think if you put Tom Brady in Kansas City, his numbers would be off the charts with those skill players. Mm-hmm. Now, my question is, if you put Mahomes in New England, what do his numbers look like? And as you move guys around, do they have the impact because of who they are, or is some of this a function of what's surrounding him? He's got a ton of supporting cast there that really helps him be successful.
And he obviously helps the supporting cast, which are also, aside from Travis Kelce, mostly young players, mostly guys that are also as far...
I mean, you got Kareem Hunt.
Hunt is the same draft class as Patrick Mahomes. Tyreek Hill is 1 year old.
It doesn't matter
I'm not saying
they are.
How
talented.
Old they are. They're very, very talented players.
Okay, right. And so it's just very interesting to me. Like a running back and a wide receiver, we know, despite a lack of experience, They are talented, really good players, which I agree with. With a quarterback, it could be a fluke. We need to see more of it. Like, I just...
We're not saying he's a fluke, Nick. We're going to do this with everyone. We did the same thing with Deshaun Watson. If there's someone coming out next year, the kid from Oregon, I'm going to... Man, Greer from West Virginia. Man, if my man comes out from Ohio State, this is what we do. This is how you analyze pro football, and we're not going to throw him into the Hall of Fame. But you know the reason why? Because we've seen so many people fail. He's off to a tremendous start. So what? So what?
But because for me, when you mentioned Randy Moss, you told him go do it again. At week 12 of that year, I think you were confident that at least that season, he's going to continue this.
No, I didn't know he was going to be one all time.
No, I'm just talking about that year.
I didn't know.
Because I'm not, people keep saying putting him in the Hall of Fame. No one's doing that. Well, the question is for this year right now. And what I do know is that if a quarterback comes out, if it's the kid from Oregon, whomever, and he throws 50 touchdowns his first year as a starter, I will also sit here on the set and say, that guy's
right,
a star.
But that's what you should be doing. Coach Mangini and I, we've been in the league too long. We should be doing exactly what we're doing. You know the reason why? Because we've seen guys have a good half a season. We've seen guys have a good year. We've seen the guys have a 2 years.
Well, Dak Prescott was an MVP candidate two or three years ago.
You told me. He's the greatest rookie I have ever seen. Nick, pump your brakes. And what happened? Car crash.
Yeah.
Derek Carr, remember when we were talking about his MVP season? And the other part of defending a guy is not just the plays that they make, but the opportunities that they give for you to make plays. And that's where I have a concern with Patrick Mahomes. When you're getting sacked 5% of the time and you're holding the football, and look, we could say the 5 turnovers is a definite outlier, but which way is he going to continue to trend? Is he going to give the defense opportunities to make plays?
We could talk about this all day, but we got to take a commercial break and pay our bills. Coach, stick around. Coming up is Thanksgiving, a must win for Dak and the boys. That's next on First Things First. Saturday, buckle up for one of the fiercest rivalries in all of sports as number 4 Michigan, number 10 Ohio State battle for a spot in the Big Ten Championship. Coverage begins Saturday at 11 Eastern on Fox or watch anywhere on the Fox Sports app or go to over to CC's house where I'm sure he'll be making apps and get some lunch for everybody.
Well, yeah, I'm serving them up in sevens because we're going for beating them 7 times in a row.
There you go.
Ohio State, Michigan, Saturday, CC's birthday, Sunday.
Come on to the house. Get it up. It was a party weekend. Let's do it.
Back Ohio here with State Coach Mangini.
I ain't coming to work on Monday.
We are going viral. National holiday. Jared Goff outdueled Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs Monday night. The Rams quarterback threw for 413 yards, 4 touchdowns. He also ran one in, and he tweeted this photo of his touchdown celebration on that run. A lot of people thought the picture looked like a basketball move. Nick?
Oh, a little finger roll? A little finger roll, a little George Gervin, a little Iceman?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Just a nice little touch. He was having a good time. Realized, that's 10 foot. I can't get that.
Oh, that play right there, that's one of the 3,800 times this year LeBron's been fouled going to the basket and not gotten the call.
Oh, my goodness. So not only you represent Patty Mahomes, then you come back, get on brand with LeBron.
I didn't pick the graphic. I'm just telling the audience what I saw. I watched that game. I lost money on that Magic game.
LeBron tattoo on his left arm and the Mahomes tattoo on his right arm.
All right. Enough.
Coach,
taking
Cowboys,
too much abuse today.
Cowboys are setting the table for a Thanksgiving feast. Their guest, Washington. Let's go over some of the things Dallas is thankful for this year. Back-to-back road wins, Ezekiel Elliott, pretty good defense, and a 5-5 record in a very shaky division. In fact, they can pull even with Washington for the NFC East lead with a win. A loss, Nick, and what happens?
Well, they're 2 back with no tiebreaker. They're basically 3 back and cooked.
Hoping for less words, but that too. Here's Dak Prescott in the pivotal division matchup.
Our backs are against the wall. Regardless, we're not worried about what we've done up to this point. It's about just moving forward, and I think that's allowed us to get on this 2-game winning streak and get the record back to 500. Is because we know our backs are against the walls. Every game matters. Every game is a must win. Nothing changes this week.
All right, Coach. Are the Cowboys now the team to beat in the NFC East?
Yeah, I can't get on board with that yet. I like Washington. I like Washington in this game. I like Colt McCoy.
I had
Colt in Cleveland. I think that he's better than people understand because he hasn't had an opportunity to play very much, and I think he'll do a good job. I really like Bill Callahan, who's in Washington. So Bill Callahan was the O-line coach in Dallas when that O-line was considered to be the best in the league and all those guys got paid. He moves on to Washington. He's done great things there with a bunch of injuries.
Yes.
And I like Jim Tomsula on the defensive line, too. There are a lot of things that I like in terms of what Washington has, even though they're dealing with the adversity that they are and the injuries that they are. So Dallas, to me, needs to prove it on a more consistent basis.
Coach brings up a good point, and I think that only thing you missed was the head coach. And Jay Gruden's done a tremendous job in coaching in Washington. New year with Alex Smith. We know Alex Smith snapped his leg last week, so he's going to be out coming down the stretch. But their ability to teach physical football on their offense and defensive line. Washington's one of those teams like the Tennessee Titans. Man, when you get done playing them, you're going to be sore for 2 or 3 days. Now, they don't have all the household names and everything. Adrian Peterson has done a phenomenal job, and they've come up with a game plan of how they can incorporate his running ability out of I formations so they can be effective, so they can stay in the game. And they've had a tremendous amount of injuries. But you got to give Jay Gruden a lot of credit for how he's kept the focus of this football team and how he's taught them. You can see they're a very, very physical team, and this is going to be a very, very physical game. I like the intel that Colt McCoy has with the offense before. That's one of the reasons why they signed him. So you can look for him to be effective, more effective than another backup if he had just signed with the team and was taking over on a short week. So I think it's going to be an exciting game. Listen, Washington, they got a lot of intel on Dallas. They play Dallas very, very difficult. And that physicality, typically Dallas goes into that and think that, you know, we have a plus in that area. In this instance, even though they're injured, I believe that Washington will be able to match their physicality.
Let me ask you this, Coach. The home field advantage, it feels like, has been muted in recent years in the NFL. I don't know if it's because of the newer stadiums. I don't know if it's because stadiums like the new one in Atlanta are so nice, people aren't in their seats as much as in the concourses. But one place that home field has, or one instance where home field cannot be overstated, has been on Thursdays this year. Thursdays this year, the home team's 9-2, and the two losses are by the Giants and the Cardinals, two teams that have struggled throughout the season. How much more difficult is it on a Thursday game for the road team, or is that just, in your eyes, an anomaly of this season?
It is difficult because you have the travel component, but I wonder what the stats are on Thanksgiving. Because Thanksgiving is like Monday Night Football. It's such a guys get up for that game in a different way than they do the typical Thursday game. So a Thursday game, a lot of guys dread. Thanksgiving is an opportunity for everybody in the country to watch you play. So I wonder how skewed those numbers are. You get a little more energy.
Yeah, I think on Thanksgiving, and I'll have to get the staff to look it up because I didn't think about how many times I've played on Thanksgiving. I think I've played on Thanksgiving three or four times at least. And you are more excited than you are than a normally Thursday telecast, because I've been in both. When we had Thursday night football when I was playing, and the anticipation of playing in such a grand stage, and it's the holiday season. You know you're going to get that weekend off. It's different. If you get that weekend off, you have a Thursday game in September or October. But around the holidays, it becomes very, very special. And everyone is watching football on Thanksgiving. Everyone's not watching football on Thursday night.
Right.
All right? And the numbers reflect that. So I think players, you go into these games, you're very sore, but you know that it's been a great tradition in the NFL, and you kind of look for kind of fulfilling people's holiday with some good football.
And let's get back to the way we started. There are implications. Oftentimes on Thursday,
that
you're
helps.
Having two games, and they don't really mean that much. This game means a lot for both of these teams.
I've been saying, as we've been promoting all week, this is the biggest game of the year in the NFC East. And, Coach, I know early in the year you don't like me looking at the schedule, but I think in week 12 it's okay to look at where teams are, and what the game means. If Dallas wins, they get a split with Washington. They're 3-1 in the division, and they have the same record as Washington. If they lose, they're 2 back, having been swept by Washington, meaning they will have no tiebreakers, meaning they have to get a game better than them. So if the Cowboys win, they will come in on Friday, and if Vegas sets the odds in the division, they will be the favorites in the division. In fact, they are the favorites in the division right now because Vegas is anticipating a win, and they don't respect Colt McCoy the way you do. If they lose, they're finished. Like, you can't come back from 3 back with five to play. Not in the it's a rarity that ever happens in the NFL. And usually if you're three back with five to play and the team you're chasing is only 7-5, it means you're not a very good football team. So as far as the stakes of this game, they couldn't be higher for the Cowboys.
Well, one thing I do like about the Cowboys is they've had adversity throughout the course of the season in the sense that everybody has killed them. Everybody has talked about the things they haven't done very well. When you look at the rest of the division, they haven't quite dealt with that as much. And there seems to be an identity that they form. There seems to be a sense of community and togetherness
that I like. Blueprint on how they win football games. Play very good defense, give Zeke the ball 25 to 30 times, don't ask Dak to do too much, right? Like, they have a very clear blueprint on what works for them and what doesn't work for them.
Yeah, getting back to Jenna's point about being concise, you did a much better job of saying exactly what I was trying to say.
Wow.
That blueprint.
I told you you're our favorite guest.
It is. They have identified what they need to do to win, and with an injury like Washington suffered, they're going to have to get used to Colt McCoy. Whether he's, you know, plays extremely well or doesn't, they still need to get used to his style during this transition.
All right, Coach, we'd love having you here this week. Have a great Thanksgiving. Happy and healthy, and we'll see you next week. Are you coming back? Are you back here tomorrow?
I'll see you tomorrow, but thanks for knowing.
You are here tomorrow, which I knew, so we'll see you tomorrow, and I'll probably say the same thing.
You could have said that quickly by not saying it at all. Smack error in the goodbye.
I didn't.
Jenna needs to check the schedule.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.